Welcome to Great Minds with Lost and Found, the podcast that connects people and reimagines systems to improve mental health for youth and young adults. I'm your host, Joel Kaskinen. Lost and Found is a comprehensive nonprofit organization that aims to do more to eliminate suicide for youth and young adults in the United States. Now that you know who we are and what we're all about, let's get to the show. Good morning and welcome back to the Great Minds with Lost and Found podcast. I am your host, Joel Kaskinen. I am sitting across from Jake Danielson today in the beautiful Spearfish, South Dakota at Black Hills State University. And I just want to start by plugging Black Hills State for allowing us to use their beautiful space today and taking time on a Friday to allow us to record here. Also want to say thank you to everyone in our audience. Yes, we are recording live, so if you hear anything in the background, it is because we are in a public space. We do have audience members today, so thank you to Jake for bringing your friends and family. We so appreciate it. This is going to be a great time. So without further ado, Jake Danielson, if you would just start by introducing yourself.
Okay, I'm Jake Danielson. I've been living in Sioux Falls for a little over a year now. I'm one of the co-founders of the We Can movement, and I'm someone who has struggled with a variety of different mental illnesses for the majority of my life. So,
absolutely. Well, let's start with the We Can movement. I think that's a perfect place to begin the podcast because we want to start on a positive note, something that is beautiful and becoming something big, or we hope it becomes big. So will you just share with our listeners what the We Can movement is and how you got started with that?
Yeah. So basically, the movement's just based around on like building mental health in the community and just starting spaces where, like, you know, like we can talk about things easier, you know. As someone who's navigated the mental health field for many years, it's really lonely, and you know, it's hard to sometimes get a hold of doctors or you know, therapists. A lot of people can't afford that kind of thing. So, and you know, all of us could just use someone, you know, we can count on, or just be in spaces where we feel accepted. So the whole basis of the movement was just, let's start creating spaces where, you know, we have good times or we talk about things, but we allow people with common struggles to come together and realize it's not that hard to talk about, you know, when there's a lot of us talking about the same thing. Yeah. We started it about 3 years ago. But right when we started it, I started hallucinating. I was diagnosed with psychosis right after a couple months after we started. So that kind of put a halt in our plans as I dealt with that for a long time.
Sure.
And, you know, that was really, really difficult for me navigating that space. I basically lost the ability to function. They were wondering if I was going to get like gray matter in my brain. They were wondering if I was going to be like permanently hospitalized. So the whole nine yards of going through that. And then I kind of came out of it and then immediately like struggled with sleeping. So then that was a whole nother process in itself of getting my sleep back. And, you know, you don't sleep for like one night and you're like, oh, like not sleeping is not that bad. But then you don't sleep for like a few weeks and it's not as fun as you think it would be.
You're like, yeah, I can't function anymore.
Yeah, you're like,
anymore.
Oh, this is actually the worst. You miss like one night of sleep and you're like, people are like, I didn't sleep at all. You're like, whatever, you know, like get over it. And then like 3 or 4 days, like, oh, no, actually, this is the worst thing on earth.
Yeah.
But so we've been really pushing the movement basically since the start of this year. So I really can't believe the growth we've made in the past 8 or 9 months. It's been really cool to see.
Yeah. I want to ask, where did We Can come from? Obviously, We Can is a powerful phrase, and the fact that it's a movement empowering people to share their stories, that reaches people, you know? So where did you come up with the name?
The name mostly came from my other founder, Osa. You know, I started podcasting before we started the movement, and he just kind of saw who we were reaching in that, you know, and we reached quite a few people in like a little time. And I was like very surprised. I didn't think people would care what I had to say or talk about, you know. So it started off with that. And then he's like you do so much. Like, what if we just brought people together? Like, because we always talked about like, I can do hard things. You know what I mean? He's like, well, we're in this together. Like, this is a team effort. Like, if we all come together, we can do more powerful things. We're like, yeah, like, we can do it. Like, it's not just a me thing. and you realize there's way more power in numbers than you ever had by yourself. So yeah.
I love it. It resonates with me specifically because with Lost and Found, we talk all the time about building resilient communities and changing systems and structures to connect people to improve mental health. And so this notion, this sentiment of we can just fully resonates with me and the work that we do. So getting connected with you and this organization, this movement is, I just think that that's really beautiful and really special. So thank you for doing that work. I want to ask just for, you know, our listeners to get a little bit better understanding of what WeCan is. It's not an organization. It's just more of like a movement to start conversations.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. We're working on becoming an organization. Obviously that's a process in itself.
Definitely. Yep.
But yeah, hopefully soon it'll be an organization. Right now it's just kind of a community full of people. I think our Facebook group has like 350 people.
Okay.
You have a website, you know, and we're doing monthly discussions right now, but we're slowly working on adding more events every month. So there's things to be on the lookout for, and we're starting in Sioux Falls, but hopefully we'll continue to grow throughout South Dakota as we get bigger. So
definitely. That's so cool. Well, switching gears here a little bit, obviously the podcast is about mental health. It's about connecting people, reimagining systems. I want to talk about your lived experiences and kind of shed some light on your story a little bit, because obviously you are a participant in our 30 Days, 30 Stories campaign for National Suicide Prevention Month. And the whole premise of that campaign is sharing stories and basically, you know, sharing stories in order to empower others to connect with mental health resources and to provide support structures that make people feel comfortable and find that resilience within their lives. And so you've already mentioned you have struggled with multiple diagnoses, multiple mental illnesses. What does that look like for you? How does that take place in your life or take shape in your life?
It was really hard when I was younger. Obviously, I didn't really know what was going on. I'd like to say I have a fairly good life. You know, like I've always had a good support system. Like my family's really good. I have good friends that I can count on. So my struggles came from like this internal place of like, I didn't know why I felt the way I did. And I didn't think anyone would care or like understand, or I thought I could get thrown back in my face. So I spent like 3 years just constantly feeling pretty terrible and just doing nothing about it. You know, just telling myself that like, it's going to get better. Just keep trudging along, you know. Yeah. The whole nine yards, you know, as a college athlete and, you know, just kind of getting the like mindset of grind, you know, just got to keep grinding through it. And after a while, you know, it just became too heavy on me to the point where like I did try to like commit suicide for the first time. And that's when I like realized that like, you know, I did need help and something wasn't right. And, you know, like wasn't my fault. And I needed to reach out to those people, whether they supported me or not, but just finding, you know, realizing after that moment that like people do care. And I did have like a stronger circle than I thought I did. And, you know, it was the start of a big battle. And that was another reason like I wanted to start the movement is when I was in behavioral health, I was like one of the only people that ever had visitors. And there's quite a few people in there, but I was like also one of the only people to ever get phone calls.
Wow.
So I always thought like, even in that moment of like, how can we build something that people can come make friends at, you know what I'm saying? And cause if it wasn't for the people I had around me, like I still almost didn't make it, even though I had good people around me. So I can imagine how hard it is for the people that feel like they have no one.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. That's a powerful story for sure. Thank you so much for sharing. I know it's vulnerable to, you know, put your life out there on a microphone in a public setting, but you've been doing it for a while. Yes. And, you know, that's really how we got connected. Yeah. And I think that's the beauty in sharing our stories is we realize that we aren't as alone as people who often are suffering with mental illnesses or mental health challenges. You know, they often find themselves feeling lonely or isolated. So, I mean, that's the whole part of the whole idea behind this campaign is connecting people to make sure that we all know that we're not in it alone. So thank you. I appreciate you sharing your story. I want to redirect a little bit to the support structure piece of things. I think it's important to talk about that when we think about building resilient communities. Obviously, a major piece of that is finding support structures and finding resources that help us through our challenges. So you've mentioned friends and family were great. You've mentioned, you know, you were in behavioral health and you got phone calls, you had visitors. You mentioned basketball, right?
Yeah.
All of those things, you know, fill your cup, fill your bucket. What other resources and support systems have you found that have worked for you that you've, you know, shared with other people who are facing challenges?
I think the biggest thing in finding a good circle for me, one was like, I thought when I started sharing my story, like, and make push everyone away. But actually, like, in talking about these things, like, I actually made, like, new groups of people that are, like, the best people I've ever met. You know what I mean? So that was, like, the cool thing. I thought, like, I think people are scared to talk about this thing because it's scared it's going to push people away, and it might. But you also meet, like, the best people, the most understanding people, like, people relate to you. And I've met, like, some of the best people I've ever been around just because of sharing my story. So that's one big thing is, you know, just being honest with, like, my story and struggles. And two is just, like, living in Sioux Falls, my first year was pretty tough. It was, like, my first year kind of, like, getting back on my feet after the whole insomnia bout. I didn't work for a long time. Mm-hmm. They didn't know if I'd ever, like, I didn't think I'd ever work a full-time job again.
Wow.
They told me I wouldn't. They didn't tell me I wouldn't, but they said that was a possibility, that, like, I might struggle to ever. So I spent a lot of time getting back on my feet, and then I isolated myself because of that, because I was just trying to, like, go to work, like, go home, like, cook dinner, hang out, like, relax, like, start the next day. And that made me, like, really lonely. It made me want to move. It made me want to leave. So I spent the majority of when I started staying in Sioux Falls just wanting to, like, trying to get my lease up so I could just get out, or finding someone to take it over so I can move away. But then as the start of this year, as I started doing the movement more, I just started getting out in the community more. And I think that was just big of making me feel, I think Sioux Falls, and I think a lot of places in South Dakota, have a great community, and there's a lot of events going on, and, like, they're scary because obviously you don't know what's going on, but you meet a lot of really great friendly people there. And I think a lot of people in those event spaces kind of fill your cup. I think that was big of me wanting to stay, is just enjoying being out and, you know, enjoying downtown. Sioux Falls is somewhere I was never at before. Now I'm there all the time. I meet people there, and I really enjoy meeting with people one-on-one and, you know, just learning about people and learning stories. So I think a big thing for me has also just been getting out in the community. And I don't always I share my story on podcasts, but I don't always just want to go out and tell people, like, hey,
yeah,
I'm struggle with mental illness. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, like, hey, I'm Jake. I have all these things that are wrong with me. So it's cool. It's cool to, like, also just be in spaces to, like, just connect with people and, you know, just connect with people on different stuff, like sports or just, mm-hmm. like the community or things we enjoy and stuff like that. So that's been another big thing for me, just in terms of feeling community. Is, like, I'm not necessarily connected with all these people, but it just makes me feel not so alone and just, like, in these fun spaces.
Yeah. Let's talk sports for a minute, because I think the community element of sports is really cool. And I think there is an increased conversation around mental health in the sports world, specifically for professional and college athletes. Now, you were a college athlete,
yes.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Yep. Where were you at?
Bismarck State.
Okay, that's right. So what was the conversation? What was the culture like there when it came to athlete mental health?
I think for a lot of athletes, it's just kind of the same thing. Like, you don't really talk about mental health as an athlete, especially, like, when you're young. You're just kind of taught to just grind. Like, that's because you're supposed to grind for your sport. You know what I mean? Like, they tell you, like, go in, like, I remember in high school, like, at 6 a.m. every morning in the gym. You know what I mean? Shooting. And I got told if I missed a day, I probably wouldn't make it.
Right.
Like, I wasn't going to, like, or, like, if I, like, missed a big shot, it's because I didn't hit the gym that one morning 8 months ago. You know, so I feel like it's kind of the same conversation, just like being an athlete, is you don't really talk about these things because you just get in the mindset of, like, I just got to grind through it. I just have to figure it out. I have to push through it. I have to push it aside. And, like, it's kind of like when you're injured in a sport, if it's not a terrible injury, you're kind of, like, told to, like, suck it up and grind through it. And that's, you kind of get stuck in that same mindset. Uh-huh. As a college athlete, of, like, when you're struggling mentally or going through things, you know, you just got to, like, figure it out and grind through it and not tell anyone, which is extremely wrong. And yeah, I also want to like get in the college athlete space and figure that all out, because I think there's a lot of college athletes who are struggling that aren't talking about it.
Definitely.
I think a big thing with athletes, sorry to kind of like go in a different direction.
No, here, I love it.
But I think a big thing with athletes after college sports that we need to focus on mental health wise is finding themselves.
Yeah, their identity is wrapped up in their sport.
Like you spend your whole life thinking you're this one thing, and then it gets, you don't do it anymore. You know, you either don't make it or you do make it, but then you graduate, you know, and then it's like, what now? So that's another big thing I think for college athletes is focusing on who you are outside of the sport, even while you're still playing. You're still a whole person. That's just a small part of you. And it takes so many people so long to like separate the two. So,
yeah. No, I love that you bring that up. And I think that that's so important, because that's something that I think I've noticed in the trends and the, you know, kind of data that we're seeing with suicide and mental health among student athletes. It's, I think a lot of it is the grind mentality and the fact that they don't feel connected to other things. You know, I work for a women's soccer team in Sioux Falls, and a lot of those gals, yes, they play for our team in the summer, but they go and play during the college seasons too. And I was just talking with one of them last week, and she was saying, you know, I'm considering transferring to a different school because outside of the sport, I don't feel any sort of connection. And so then I was asking how that impacted her mental health and, you know, how that impacted her finding community on campus and all of that jazz. And so I think your point is so spot on, you know, like people need to figure out ways to integrate into other communities outside of their sports or outside of their job or outside of, you know, whatever it is that they are pursuing, because we're holistic people. Yeah. We're not siloed. You know, we have other needs that we have to fulfill.
Yeah. I think we just get like you ask, I think it's like a lot like with society, but like, what do you do when you meet someone? Mm-hmm. You ask them what their name is and what they do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you already create, whether you want to or not, who that person is based on their profession. And, you know, work is obviously also very important, but it's just such like a small part of who you are as a whole. And I think it's just so hard to realize that is when you put so much into something, like realizing there's just so much more to you, you know, it's just a piece of a full person.
Yeah. If you were to give a piece of advice to a young person pursuing sports regarding their mental health, what would it be?
I'd say, if you're struggling, you know, reach out. And I'd say too, like, if you love that sport, like give it all you got, but also like find out who you are away from it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You only play the sport, like especially high school, college, even if you're doing extra work for 4 to 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, sorry.
That's okay.
Got a little itch in my throat. But
me too.
I tried to fight it. I was trying to act like it wasn't there. But I feel like it's only 4 to 5 hours of your day, you know, and we act like it's our whole lives. And like for, especially like for kids on the res, for some of them it is their whole life, but there's so much more than that. And I feel like working on like self-discovery is like a big thing. And, you know, finding out who you are away from that would just be a big part of like, what do you enjoy doing? Like, what are values of you as a person that you think that you are, even whether it's with a sport or not, like what, I think sports are a great driving factor in being who you want to be outside of sports. I think there's a lot of great characteristics like leadership, teamwork, all those things. But how do you carry that over into just your everyday life? You know, I don't think I think sports are important, but I don't think your life should revolve around them. It's not healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, it's just not good for you. And and if you feel like not good, like talk to someone, anyone, another teammate, a coach. I feel like coaches are a lot more understanding, especially today.
Yeah.
A lot of the younger coaches, you know, it's harder with some older coaches. There's obviously a generational gap there, but there's a lot more younger coaches I feel like are pretty understanding. I know we had a good coach at my high school that I feel like any of those kids could talk to. So
definitely. So last sports question, and then we'll shift gears. what, like, as a former student athlete, what was it about it that helped you in your journey with mental health? Was there any sort of support or like positives that came out of it? I know, like, obviously we've talked about how the grind mentality is detrimental and, you know, like showing up and not having an identity is detrimental, but what did you get out of it that was a support piece too?
The coolest part about being a college athlete is like the team aspect. You know, you get to spend, you're spending every day with this group of people. And so you become like a family. You really do. And that's why, like, I wish student athletes spent more time with other people, but like, it makes sense, like, why they only really hang out with each other. But I think that was, I didn't even want to play college basketball. My dad talked me into it. My biological father talked me into it. But he, yeah, but I'm glad I did. It was a good experience. I'm glad I went. And mostly just because, like, there's 12 other guys that, like, was a family to me, and I still talk to quite a few of them today.
That's awesome.
You know, so it was just cool to, like, have this experience, and, like, you're doing the same thing, and a lot of your struggles are the same, so it's like you guys really connect, you know, because for a lot of 6 to 8 months, you're doing a lot of the same things together. You're frustrated about the same things. You're not necessarily talking about mental health, but you're talking about your frustrations in basketball and how school is overwhelming and all these other things that are going on, and like being college and being an athlete. And you feel like you have a group of people that understand you and care about you. And, you know, you do everything together. You know, we'd all, like, if one of us had to go to Walmart, 6 of us would go to Walmart. You know what I mean? Like, you'd walk into one of the dorms and be like, who wants to go to Walmart? And then we'd have a whole group. So I think it was just cool to, you know, have that aspect of team. And even when I stopped playing and I went to USD, I started hanging out with some guys on the Augie basketball team, and it's just kind of the same thing. You know, it's just like you do feel a sense of family and just a sense of connection. And like, all these guys are from different backgrounds. You know, there's guys like JUCO, it's like different because like you're recruiting from everywhere.
Yeah.
So you had guys from like Milwaukee, you had guys from, you know, the other end of the state. We had someone from Nigeria, you know, but you all connect because you're going through the same thing. And then that's just kind of how it relates to mental health to me, is we're all going through different stuff. We're all completely different people and different avenues of life, but we all have so many common struggles that if we sat down and like just talked it out, like, we'd realize how like similar we really are. And that's the thing with basketball, is like you have this common thing, basketball, that brings all these different people together. And then you like these people that you'd probably never spend time with if you didn't play that sport with them.
Right. Definitely. Okay. We'll switch gears from sports. We could talk sports all day, given both of our passion for it, but we'll switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about identity. You mentioned, you know, Kids on the Res. You're a member of Oglala Lakota? No.
No.
You're not.
Honorary member.
Honorary member. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm totally wrong. Mistaken. Yeah. It's okay.
It's okay. That's usually happens.
I do think that it's important to spend some time there, though.
Yeah. And the rest of my family all is.
Got just you. Not me
individually, but the rest of my family that is on the reservation, all are members.
Okay. Okay. So let's speak to that a little bit, because I think suicide impacts that demographic, that population of people, Native Americans, Indigenous Americans, you know, they are one of the biggest groups facing risks for suicide. So I want to talk about that systemically and systematically. You know, you're an honorary member, your friends and family are all part of this.
Yeah.
What does mental health look like for the reservations? What does it look like for tribal people who, you know, don't have the same access that we do in Sioux Falls or in Rapid City?
I think the toughest part about like mental health, when you like go to the reservation and you talk about that community, is so many of them just have so much trauma. You know, there's so much going on there. There's so much poverty. There's, you know, lots of other issues going on. That's just like, and a lot of kids there don't feel like there's a way out, you know, and they go through all these struggles and all these terrible things. And like, how do you deal with them? You know what I mean? How do you process all this stuff that you have to deal through? Like, as going through that, like, intense trauma, you know what I'm saying? Going through all these different things, struggling with all these issues, you know what I'm saying? Growing up in poverty and feeling like you can't get out. It's no wonder that rates are higher there because there's just such a sense of hopelessness.
Yeah.
Because when you feel like you're stuck in a situation and there's nothing you can do, like, how does that stuff not cross your mind? Mm-hmm. You know, when you feel like you've lived the same way your whole life and you can't escape, like, you know, all this trauma and there's nowhere to take it or go with it, then, you know, it feels like almost like there's an only option. That's your only option.
Yeah.
And I feel like the res has a great sense of community. There's a lot of amazing people there, you know, that lift each other up. And I feel like you could walk into like random houses and people would welcome you and, you know what I'm saying? And cook you a meal and call you family. And, you know, I had friends that like I would stay with for like weeks. And be like, oh yeah, like you're like our other son. You know what I mean? So
that's so cool.
So it's really cool in like that regard of the community does come together for these things. But I think when I think of like how we can change things there, it's just how can we give outlets to people to process all this trauma and, you know, what I'm and work through it and also give them outlets to feel like they can get away and pursue life, you know, away from have a different avenue. Because obviously if you think you only have one path, how are you going to believe that things can get better? You know, if you only see one way out of this.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's really hard to process intense trauma and come out the other side. And I think there's a few people that I know that have done amazing job of it on the res, and it's just, how can we look to those people and help build hope in other people? I feel like not enough people who've overcome that stuff on the res speak on it. I feel like there's not a lot of hope for kids on the res because everyone who talks about overcoming stuff is not on the res, mm-hmm. you know? And why would you want to listen to someone who hasn't come from the same path as you?
Yeah.
So I think also having leaders in that community that have come out of that community that can be like, yeah, you can get out. Yeah, like you can overcome. You just got to like, there's ways away from this. So these younger kids can be like, oh, like this is someone like me that did do it. Like maybe I can do it too.
Yeah. You just answered the next question that I was going to ask, which was culturally, is mental health even spoken about on the reservation? So you kind of answered that. But I mean, I just think you're so right. Like people need to, they need models who are speaking about their own lived experiences. It's the same way that, you know, representation matters in media or in movies or what have you. Like we need more Native movies and directors. We need more queer movies and directors, and we need more, you know, da 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 da. The list can go on and on,
yeah.
But like, it's so important to be modeling, sharing your stories. And that's, you know, that's the whole thing that we're doing with Lost and Found is modeling that for other people.
Yeah. I feel like when I was really struggling and like I felt really hopeless, I tried to like watch motivational speeches, you know, to like pull myself out of it. But a big problem with that is like a lot of those guys like are like, you just gotta like train your mind and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, that's not how it works for people like me. So like I had a lot of struggles with like believing I could actually be better because I didn't see a lot of people with like clinical depression or like psychosis talk about being better. So I kind of felt hopeless of like, oh, this is all BS. Like there's, you know, the only way to be super successful is to have a mind that functions properly and all those things. And it was mostly because I couldn't find anyone in a similar situation as me that came out of the other side. So yeah, I think just for anyone, just for any group of people, you need representation. You need to see people like you come out the other side, because I talk about it like in another sport. It's like if I don't really know how to swim very well.
Okay.
So if I just took someone random and it was like, all right, this is how you swim, they'd probably be like, all right, screw you. You know what I mean? So I think about it the same thing of like, if someone who doesn't have a similar struggle or doesn't know the things that you go through is trying to speak on something that like you go through, like you're kind of like, all right, like we talked about with like the computer and the podcast.
Yes,
like,
yes.
When someone's trying to tell you to do something that they clearly know nothing about, it's just like frustrating. And it does even worse, I think, to like hear someone that doesn't have the same situation or struggles as you try to speak on your situation and struggles, it creates a lot of anger and frustration. And I feel like that's where mental health also gets worse, is people are telling people like to get over it, or you know what I mean? Or like, just like think happy thoughts and all that stuff. And
relax, yeah, you're fine. Yeah. It's all in your head.
Yeah. And I think it's tough because I think that works for those people.
Yeah.
So I think they're giving the best advice that they think they can, but they just don't have the same experiences. So like to them, just saying like, oh, just like get over it. Like it is in your head, because they probably can be like, oh, I'm having a negative thought. I just need to be positive. And then it goes away. You know, and that would be awesome. I would love that.
I would love that too.
That sounds fantastic. I'm in like leaders 201, and one girl in the group goes, yeah, I don't think I've had a negative thought in like 3 months. And I said, and she's like, and if I have one, I just push it away. I said, oh, what's, wow, that sounds,
I
was like, there's real human beings. Like,
yeah, I need whatever she's taking.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, that sounds, I had a bunch of bad ones before I walked in this building. So like 3 months, like, I almost didn't even come today. Like I was, so I mean, wow, that sounds fantastic.
That's wild.
Yeah. I always joke around when I have like a good day. I'm always like, wow, some people feel like this every day, but that's just,
man.
Yeah. It's my favorite little joke.
Gotta, you know, spin it positively a little bit, you know, make it lighthearted. Yeah, mental health isn't always all bad, right?
I know, for sure.
That's so funny. Ugh. Well, let's pivot conversation topics here one more time. The goal of the 30 Days, 30 Stories campaign and these conversations for our podcast series, we have three kind of goals: to improve or increase awareness, of mental health challenges of our neighbors, of our family members, of our friends, you know, our community members, to empower other people to share their stories, and then to also provide support structures and resources to other people. So when we think about those three things, I'm curious, what are you doing and what is the We Can movement doing to increase awareness of mental health, to empower other people to share their stories, and to provide resources for people in our communities that are negatively impacted by mental health?
I feel like the biggest thing, we're also like sharing stories on Fridays. We just do every Friday. Someone share their story, we share it to all our socials. So that's been cool. Like I said, we have monthly discussions, which like anyone can come to. It's free. We don't ever charge. Mm-hmm. Anyone can come that wants to.
You do those in person?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. We have a different location every month. I think this month's going to be at McKinnon Park again.
Cool.
Before it gets, hopefully it doesn't be like
it's
this.
It's not but yeah, gross
yeah,
weather.
Yeah, but we're going to try it one more time outside. We have a backup plan if it doesn't work out. But just, we're like I said, the movement's trying to create spaces where people can just talk freely and enjoy each other. Yeah. And even like in our like just monthly discussions, there's already been people that are like, oh, like this is my new best friend. Like I've never had someone I can talk to about this stuff. You know, and like that's so cool. Like that's the whole point. It's like I have someone I can talk to about, or like people be like, do you want to meet like next Wednesday and just talk about stuff? So like that's the whole point. It's like bringing people together and like building relationships because of our struggles. Yeah. I think like that's so strong. Is we realize like how close we really are to people if we like shared this stuff.
Yes.
It's like that's why so many of us are so isolated, is because we don't talk about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's so many people who like care. And it's hard because there's like a lot of people that also don't, but like there's so many people that do care and want to be there and be advocates and just get to know you and, you know, be your friend. And so just having spaces and like having them be fun, but also be serious, like in, you know, different settings, like doing all kinds of different things where like we can just have a good time and build friendships and relationships is kind of the movement's goal. And we're currently working on a resource list. We kind of want to do our resource list differently. I feel like your guys is fantastic.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's really good.
I'd like to say that it was me, but it was not.
If you need a good resource list, Lost and Found has it all. But we want to do our resource list differently of like, here's where you need to go if like you're in critical condition. But like we want to do different things of like if you're struggling, like because people struggle differently. So like if you're struggling and your problem is eating, here's free diet coaches that can help you. Like, this is what the groceries you need to get. And like, these are the meals you need to eat. One of my friends struggles a lot with that. She has an eating disorder. I used to as well. So we want to have stuff like that. Like, here's financial advisors. If you struggle, if you struggle with paying your bills in dark times, or you're struggling to get through, or like money's a problem, you know, like, here are these resources. Like, here's like life coaches. If you're just trying to like get better and work on yourself, like, here's like Leaders of Tomorrow. Here's some groups you can apply for. So we want to do it of like, we want to build community in all spaces. That's our plan. We don't want to just build community for one group of people that struggle. We want to look at all groups of people that struggle with different things and bring them together to their group. And so when we think of a resource list, we think of how can we help people that are struggling with all different sorts of things find what they need. I think sometimes when we see mental health, I think sometimes it has a negative stigma of only being when you're suicidal or when things are at the worst. But mental health is the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can help people when they're here. You can help people when they're here. You can help people when they're there. And honestly, we'd save a lot more people if we help people when they're in the middle than if we help people at the bottom. At the bottom is when things get pretty hopeless. I know when I struggled with like my, when I decided that I was going to like go through with it, there's really no one who could have talked me out of it at the time. It wasn't until I got out of that space to get out of that. So I think if we can help people sooner, you know, learn about these things and find groups and get better before they even hit that rock bottom, that'll save. That's not going to show up on the statistics and all that stuff, but that would save more lives, I think, than trying to, as much as we need to help people when they're at their lowest, I feel like we need to help people when they're starting to go that way, or even when they're just not sure where to go. So that's kind of how I think of mental health in terms of
that.
Yeah.
We call that upstream prevention.
Yeah. I think if when I was like 18 years old, obviously I had like psychosis and stuff that was bound to happen, and that was going to be a whole thing in itself. But like, I also like got help immediately. And I also got help immediately with that. And if I didn't, that probably would have been a way worse situation for me. But like, I think if like, one, if I wouldn't even knew what was going on in high school and could have got help earlier, like, I don't think I would have ever gone down a suicidal path.
Sure.
I think, like, I would have reached out. I would have found people I could trust who I could not trust. And I would have done things differently just to protect my mental that I didn't do until now. Mm-hmm. Now I'm 25 years old and just now figuring out how to take care of myself, which is cool. But also, like, I wish I could have learned it before I went through all the stuff that I did.
Totally. I want to ask kind of one last-ish question. We'll get into some other things, but one like last big question. If you could wave a magic wand and make all sorts of systematic changes as the weekend movement, no money is involved, no powers that be are involved, you have full and total control, what are you doing?
The first thing I'm doing is making mental health a required learning in school systems. Most people I know that like talk to me about their mental health didn't know about it till like their later 20s. Like, didn't even know they had something going on. I feel like most high schools I know don't teach it at all. Mm-hmm. Don't talk about it. That was the first thing, is like, I'd like make it like required in health classes, like at least for 4 weeks, like a 4 week chapter on just like, these are the issues, these are your symptoms, here's ways to deal with it if you don't think it's severe, here's where you can go, and it should be based on like the state or whatever school you're teaching it in. That'd be one thing. I think we should, I don't know why we don't teach it in schools. We teach physical health. Your mental health is just as important, if not more important. So it's crazy that we don't even talk about it in high school or college, really. Yeah. That's something you have to like find on yourself, out yourself, which I think is ridiculous. I also would make it, it's hard because it's how like, especially like in Sioux Falls, is smaller, but it's really hard to get in to get help. You usually have to see a doctor, and then your doctor has to refer you, and then you have to wait 3 months to see a psychiatrist, and then you see a psychiatrist and that might not even work.
Yeah.
And then sometimes like you miss an appointment because something happens and then they don't prescribe you your meds, which was ridiculous. So that's another thing like I would change immediately, is like, we need to get people help immediately. that's another thing with like building community in the movement is I know a lot of people that like they make a psychiatrist appointment when they think they're going to like end it, when they're like on the border of like this, I don't know what to do. And then they have to wait 3 months.
Yeah.
How are we going to save this person for 3 months while they wait to go? And then they have to wait 6 weeks for their meds to even kick in. That's 4.5 months of someone who feels like they need help this second.
Yeah.
So I would just make it easier for people to get help, immediate help. There should be ways to access that every day and not like have to be institutionalized. I don't think everyone needs to be. I know when I struggled with insomnia, I just needed medication. I had to stay for like 3 nights. I didn't need to. I just couldn't see a psychiatrist for 2 months. And there's no way I could go 2 months without sleeping.
Sure.
Yeah, I already went 3 days and I was already off my rocker. But I think we lose a lot of people in that window. I just had a friend the other day that was like, I have to wait 2 months to see my psychiatrist. Like, am I going to be okay? Like, so I just feel like we need more immediate help and be able to get people in and not necessarily have to feel like it's like they're going to do something or hurt themselves, but they just need help right now. They don't need to wait 4 months. So that would be my other thing is just more immediate help. Let's get people in. Let's get them help right away. Let's get the whole process going so people can start to feel better.
Definitely.
Final free counseling. And free counseling. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Free counseling.
That's love that one.
I feel like a lot of people, especially on the res, you can't afford it.
Yeah.
I think therapy's great. I think everyone should try it.
Access and affordability is definitely a crisis issue. Yeah,
that's a big thing is almost, if I wasn't on insurance, I wouldn't go to therapy. I mean, I'm lucky I go through Southeastern. Like, I get therapy for free. But if I had to pay for it, I wouldn't go. There's no way I could afford it. There's just no way. And I feel like that just, and like, I get it. You know, it's how the system works. But I feel like we'd also save a lot of people if therapy was, not even if not free, but $10 a month. You know, like a gym membership almost. Like, cheap, but not like $100 a session. Like, who has $400 to $500 a month? Unless you're the really higher class. And those are the people that get help. And then, like, what are we doing for the lower class people that don't necessarily have the same resources?
Absolutely. All right, wrapping up our conversation, final thoughts that you have. Is there anything that we have not discussed today that you wanted to share with the world, with our listeners, with our community members?
I just want to say, just personally, no matter how bad it is, like if you hold on to like a little bit of hope, it gets better. I feel like I'm someone who's went through the ringer. I've attempted suicide multiple times. I've had like really bad depression, anxiety, like hallucinations, psychosis, insomnia. Like I've gone through it all, and I spent a lot of time thinking that like I'd never get better. Mm-hmm. I felt like things would never get better. Like I was gonna be miserable forever. I used to literally think like I used to have a bad mindset of like, I'm not going to kill myself today, but I eventually am. Like, that's how it's going to end. That's going to be my path. Like, I'll eventually hit my limit.
Yeah.
And, but there was always a little part of me that held on to like, what if it did get better? Like, what if this stuff wasn't so bad? What if it wasn't so debilitating? And just that little, like, I didn't believe it, but it was just like a little tiny piece in the back of my brain. And that's literally what held me through my like darkest times, was like this small belief that things actually get better. And then as days went on, I started to see it grow. And that's my biggest thing is, even if you don't necessarily believe it in the moment, like just hold on to a little piece of maybe someday things won't be like this. And then I also ask myself the question of if I am going to get better, like if life wasn't as debilitating as it was, what would it look like and what would that take for me? Because I also felt like I wasn't putting in the effort. I kind of just gave up on myself. And the second I told myself, like, if things were to someday be the way you wanted them to, like, what would you have to do right now? And then that's literally the first time that things started getting better for me, is when I took obviously there's some things out of your control, but I also had to take accountability for what I wasn't doing, because I just believed that I was consumed by this illness. And I realized this year for the first time that I'm not, it's just a small part of me that I'll always have to deal with. But the more I grow and the more I learn and the more I do things that like help me, the smaller it becomes, the smaller piece of me it becomes.
I love that. Thanks for sharing. Where can our listeners find you, connect with you, the Weekend Movement, plug website, social media, what have you? Just really want to make sure that people know where to find you.
Weekendmovement.org is our website. Pretty easy, pretty straightforward. I podcast, it's called the Destroying Depression Podcast. If you type that in, it's on all platforms. You can find it Apple, Spotify, Google, just wherever. Most, I won't say all, but the majority of podcast platforms it's on, and you just type in Destroying Depression. I don't think anything else pops up if you type it in. I think I'm the only one. My Instagram is WeCanJakey. If you shoot me a DM, I'll always answer. My podcast, my DMs are always open. Shoot me a message. But yeah, and then like we have a Weekend Movement Facebook group. Feel free to join that. And just same thing, just type in Weekend Movement. It should pop up. But yeah, those are my main plugs. And you can find me on all their social media. I'm basically on everything. So yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you, Jake, so much for this wonderful conversation. And again, big thanks to Black Hills State University for allowing us to record in their space. And thanks to your friends and family for being here in our audience. So until next time, listeners, stay well, be resilient.
Thanks so much for listening. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review Great Minds wherever you listen to your podcasts. For more information about Lost and Found, go to resilienttoday.org. That's resilienttoday.org. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube @ Resilient Today. Until next time, do more and stay well.